Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the DICOI press conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Instructions will be given at that time. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star, then zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I'd now like to turn the conference over to your host, Ms. Emily James. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Welcome to today's press call to discuss the NCAA Division I Committee on Infractions decision regarding California State University Northridge. Members of the media, you should have received a link to both the press release and the public decision, which contains the details of this case. The information can also be found at ncaa.org. Committee on Infractions is an independent group comprised of representatives across the NCAA membership and the public. The members who reviewed this case include Michael Adams, Chancellor at Pepperdine University, Britton Banowski, Executive Director of the College Football Playoff Foundation, Carol Cartwright, Chief Hearing Officer for this panel and President Emeritus at Kent State University, Gregory Christopher, Athletics Director at Xavier University, Larry Parkinson, Director of Enforcement for the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, Greg Sankey, Chair of the Committee on Infractions and Commissioner for the SEC, and Sankar Suryana Ryan, University Counsel, Princeton University. Carol Cartwright will now discuss the findings and decisions of the committee. Following her opening comments, she will take questions.
Thank you. The Committee on Infractions decision details the findings and penalties in this case. Our comments today are designed to address your questions. However, the report stands on its own merits. The violations in this case centered on unethical conduct by a former California State University Northridge director of basketball operations who committed academic misconduct for and provided impermissible academic extra benefits to a total of 10 men's basketball student athletes. The former director of basketball operations denied completing coursework or providing impermissible academic benefits to student athletes. However, the panel did not find his claims to be credible. In the instance of one student athlete, a tutor found he did not know how to log into the system used by the university to submit assignments, but found that there were assignments for him submitted through the system. Additionally, student athlete mentors and tutors found that coursework for other men's basketball student athletes was submitted online without the student athlete's knowledge. The grades that student athletes received for online courses were significantly higher than grades they received in traditional classes, and the student athletes reported working with a coach for their online classes. Metadata collected during the investigation from the former director of operations computer contained approximately 3,000 individual actions involving the 10 men's basketball student athletes. He could not explain why metadata showed logins, submissions, and attempts of assignments as quizzes from his computer at an IP address from his parents' house, which is more than 70 miles from the university. Once he was removed from his position, six of the student athletes' grades in an online course dropped significantly. He also stated that student athletes used his computer to complete coursework. However, none of the men's basketball coaching staff could recall ever seeing a student athlete using that computer. The former director of basketball operations received NCAA rules education and knew or should have known that completing coursework for student athletes was impermissible. We also found that the university did not monitor the former director of operations' involvement in the online coursework of 10 student athletes and did not adequately investigate concerns. Concerns were raised as early as 3 years before the violations began. The university failed to take adequate steps to thoroughly investigate the concerns or monitor the actions of the former director of basketball operations. The university noted that there was dysfunction between its academic affairs and athletics departments. And we found that the dysfunction and lack of communication allowed the violations involving the former director of basketball operations to occur. While the violations in this case are serious, the university should be commended for the substantial and widespread corrective actions it took once the investigations concluded. We prescribe the following penalties and corrective measures: a 3-year probation period from December 7, 2016 through December 6, 2019. A 5-year show cause order for the former director of basketball operations. Any NCAA school employing him in an athletically related role during that time must appear with him before a committee on infractions panel. A vacation of wins in which the men's basketball student athletes participated while ineligible. The university will identify the games impacted following the release of the public report. A $5,000 fine plus 1% of the men's basketball budget. We also accepted several corrective actions self-imposed by the university, including a self-imposed 1-year men's basketball postseason ban, which was completed during the 2015-16 season, and a reduction of 2 men's basketball scholarships over 2 academic years. Other corrective actions self-imposed by the university can be found in the public report. This concludes my opening remarks.
Thank you, Stacey. Can you please explain to reporters how they can ask a question?
Sure. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone, and you may remove yourself by pressing the pound key. Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then 1 at this time. One moment for our first question. And we'll go to Chris Carlson with Syracuse Post. Please go ahead.
Carol, some of the details in this report read very much like the Syracuse case involving Jim Boeheim. What's your understanding of why head coach responsibility wasn't pursued in this case?
Well, let's be clear, first of all, that we're here just to discuss this particular case. As you note in our report, the issue of head coach responsibility was explored. It was raised during the hearing, and some additional interviews were accomplished. The head coach, in order not to have such a charge, needs to be able to rebut the presumption that he's responsible. And in this case, after a second round of interviews, it was determined that he had successfully rebutted that presumption, and the panel accepted that.
And once again, if you have a question, please press star, then 1 at this time. And there are no questions in queue. We have Chris Carlson. Please go ahead.
Carol, I'm sorry about that. How was that presumption of responsibility rebutted in this case?
Well, there are a series of tests that need to be identified and analyzed, and you can get those specific tests by referring back to the public relations group at the NCAA. They can point you to the specific document. But each and every one of those tests was analyzed, and the final conclusion was that the coach had successfully rebutted that presumption based on the analysis around those tests.
And at this time, there are no questions in queue. Please continue.
And this concludes our comments today. Seeing no other questions, the recording of this teleconference will be at nca.org in the near future. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That does conclude your conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T Executive Teleconference. You may now disconnect.